Lazarus reason for putting in Diamond C. Well, I was very skeptical of this whole business, particularly because the fragments that he had there looked identical to these diamond chips. By the way, I have written a memo on my interesting trip to New York City to buy these particular diamond fragments that we're using as seeds. You might want to read that sometime. It's in my spring-bound notebooks where I had my various published papers and other bits of information concerning patents and whatnot, as well as some of the GE reports. When this diamond of Strong's was x-rayed, it turned out to be a single crystal. Well, it was hard for me to understand how a single crystal diamond would grow in the irregular shaped splinter, that if you put it with the splinters that we had purchased to use as seeds, would look just exactly like these. Besides, there was some uncertainty in the situation because Strong had let this thing sit on his desk for such a long period of time. Now, we had had the problem of our friends introducing, quote, seeds into the experiments we were doing and all sorts of hanky-panky of that nature that apparently has gone on since time immemorial in situations where people have been trying to synthesize diamonds. If you read the literature, you'll find out that there are claims that Wayne Moisson thought he made diamonds, that some of his assistants had been playing pranks on him by putting seeds in the mixtures that he was using trying to make diamonds. And we had these seeds here that we were using for the purpose of seeds that others had access to. And I had cases myself where my friends had put diamonds in the material that I had grown. Now, in Strong's mind, he had synthesized diamond, and Bundy and Bovenkirk and Cheney and Nerad and others in the lab all quickly grabbed onto this as being finally a synthesis of diamond. Now, Strong immediately set about to try and duplicate this run without success. Now, just about 1 week later, then Strong's decision that he had made diamonds, I made diamonds. Now, the date that I made these diamonds was the 16th of December of 1954. Now, I had been experimenting all this time. In fact, as I have already mentioned, I was the one that was sparking the entire problem. Bundy still had not come back to work on the diamond project at this point. He was still off working on turbine bearings and other problems. Well, on this day, I had taken a clue from nature in another approach to try and make diamonds. In my all-carbon belt apparatus, I had a little graphite cylinder which is being used as a heating element and also to supply the graphite to make diamonds. Inside this cylinder of graphite, which was plugged at the ends with graphite, I had placed iron sulfide. This is known as the mineral troilite. I had also placed a little octahedron diamond seed in the near the center, just below the center of this tube. Now, I happened to have it up to just the right pressure and just the right temperature and just the right timing sequence. I had had it at a pressure which at that time was considered to be 95,000 atmospheres. I had held the thing for about 3 minutes and then had slowly lowered temperature and pressure, trying to conserve my animals, keep them from breaking. I've described all this, the details of the experiment, in the Journal of Chemical Education, so you might want to refer to that paper. But I opened the cell on this day, and the cell just broke open where I cut the glitter of quite a number of little tiny diamonds, and I could see with my naked eye their little triangular faces. Now, I just knew at this instant that I had made diamonds. I was real skeptical that Strong had made diamonds. They'd been working frantically, he and his assistants, during this week, trying to duplicate that run without success. I might mention at this point that they continued to work night and day trying to duplicate that run. And before they were through, they completed over 200 runs in trying to duplicate Strong's run without success. In other words, that run was never duplicated, not even to this day. Yet, the entire management continued to regard that as a synthesis of diamonds, and it was the first synthesis of diamonds that had ever been made. Now, out of the other side of their mouth, later on, the company kept emphasizing that in order to be sure that diamonds had synthesized, you had to be able to duplicate them. Well, to get back to my own run, my own reactions at this point were probably the most unusual that I've ever had in my life. It's difficult to describe them. But I just knew inside that I had made diamonds, and my hands began to tremble. And my knees became weak, and I just had to sit down to get my composure. Well, when I had regained my composure, and I judge it was 10 minutes before I did, I went upstairs where there was a microscope and looked at these beautiful little crystals under a microscope, and they had all the facial characteristics of diamonds. Now, I might mention that these didn't look at all like the diamond that Strong had said he synthesized. You couldn't see a triangular face, which is characteristic of diamond growth, anywhere on Strong's diamond. It looked like a diamond splinter, identical to these things that we had been using occasionally for diamond seeds, in which I had purchased some carats of some time before. In this connection, it's interesting to note that later on, many pictures of Strong's diamond alongside of a diamond photograph needle were shown. This was shown in the original publicity and whatnot. Now, I had a fellow tell me from Christensen Diamond Tool Company, I became acquainted with these fellows somewhat later after I moved to Brigham Young University. Now, when this man, who was very familiar with diamonds and their characteristics, first saw this photograph of Strong's diamond, this synthetic diamond that he had made alongside this photograph needle, he said, "If they drew that diamond, I'll eat my hat. All that diamond is a chip. It's a splinter from a bigger diamond." Well, to get back to the diamonds that I had grown, the diamonds that I grew were polycrystalline, but it was intergrown crystals of tiny octahedral diamonds. In character, they didn't look at all like Strong's diamonds. I had grown them in 3 minutes. Strong had said that it had taken these 13 hours to grow this diamond. Well, I quickly went to work and duplicated my experiment. I left the diamond seed out, found I could grow diamonds without the diamond seed. I wondered if sulfur had been responsible for growing the diamonds. I wondered if it was iron or whether it had to be iron sulfide or just what. So I tried growing diamonds with iron alone and was able to grow them with iron alone. I could not grow them with sulfur alone. The tantalum seemed to be playing a role, seemed to be helping the catalysis for initial growth of the diamond. The diamonds always grew at the end of the tube against the tantalum. I wondered also if it was a matter of the temperature being hotter or cooler in this region. At any rate, I continued my experiments for about a month, making somewhere, as I remembered, around 27 runs. I have this written down in some of my published works. And as I remembered, I made diamonds in about 12 out of those 27 runs. Of course, I was varying conditions and this, that, and the other, trying to find out what was going on. Well, none of my colleagues had expressed an interest over this full month of time, particularly in what I was doing. They were still trying to duplicate this run of Herb Strong. Well, Herb eventually came to say, well, it undoubtedly did not take that full 13 or 16 hours, whatever it was, to grow my diamonds. They undoubtedly grew in 2 or 3 minutes, just as Hall has found out now. And as time went on, Strong tried to twist things so that my work represented a duplication of his work. Of course, the system that I was using was entirely different. I was working in a much higher pressure and higher temperature. And I had made the amazing discovery that you could grow diamonds in high yield in just 2 minutes' time. That's all it would take before the diamond growth was complete. So immediately, I had the basis for a commercial synthesis. Also, Strong was working in a steel half belt, which we're pretty sure could not reach the required pressure that we now know is required to have made the diamond. Well, now, the one thing that Nerad and Marshall were trying to do, it became obvious. I mean, this was a very difficult time in my life. I was heartbroken at times, I was mad at times, and I had every sort of reaction because of the way I was being treated. They were just doing their best to show that Strong had really made diamonds first, even though this run has to this day never been duplicated. I came to realize that they wanted the first diamond to be made in this $150,000 double-acting press. They weren't going to tell the management that it wasn't strictly being used a double-acting press. They tied both rams together. But they wanted the diamonds to be made in that press to save their own skins. Although to me there was no point in saving their skins. Who cares if $150,000 had been wasted? If after 125 years, someone in the company had somehow made diamonds, even if they'd made them in an apparatus that only cost a couple of $1,000. Well, now, when Suits, the director of the lab, came down to see about these diamonds that I was making, first question he asked me was, Tracy, did you make these in the big press? Well, I had to tell him no. Well, he was disappointed, but also somehow he seemed to be having to save his skin and tell the management that these diamonds were made in the big press so that they wouldn't have wasted their money on this thing. They must have had some difficulty in convincing the management in the first place that this thing was needed. Well, there's some other interesting things here. I might not get them in the order, and if they're occurred, then I'll try to get them down. Shortly before I had made these diamonds, I don't remember how long it was before, the company was really becoming disinterested in the whole project. And I heard real news that they wanted to drop the thing. Originally, they had said that they would be willing to spend $1 million on this project, but I know at this point they'd only spent somewhere around $300,000, everything included, and yet they were thinking that there was strong talk of dropping the whole thing. I don't know whether I said it or not, but Bundy wasn't even working on the thing at this time until as soon as the diamonds had been made. He quickly came back to help Strong see if he couldn't duplicate his run, and they worked like dogs to do that. Now, I'm not one to particularly share the glory, but I didn't say that right. I'm one that's usually pretty generous in sharing the glory and pretty generous with people as a rule. But the thing that was getting me down was the fact that I was being left out of the picture altogether. Now, immediately, the company had to make decisions as to how they were going to publicize this, or if they were going to publicize it, and what they would tell, and how much, and so on. And very early, Strong, who was obviously extremely concerned that he should get the major honor and glory for this achievement, began cozying up to the management and the man who had been assigned to write a story. Strong immediately took him out to dinner and gave him all the dope and whatnot, and I just kind of sat back, not being particularly a fighter. At least at that time, I wouldn't fight for much. I just sat back and kind of felt bad about the whole thing. Well, when that first report came out that had been written after Strong had gone to dinner with this writer and coached him properly, this report talked about the big accomplishment of Strong and Bundy in synthesizing diamonds. And then down in a little two-sentence paragraph, it made the statement that Hall and Wentorf had also succeeded after Strong in synthesizing diamonds. Well, now, Wentorf got on this thing about a month later, by working in the belt under the same approximate pressure and temperature conditions that I had found efficacious for making diamonds. Yeah, as a matter of fact, Wentorf was on vacation in Wisconsin at the time that all this diamond synthesis I was doing was going on. And as soon as he came back, of course, he immediately jumped onto it. And he just substituted the other metals around iron, just as anyone would have done. If I'd had an assistant that I could have had working for me, I would have had him just making all these substitutions. But he quickly found that most any transition metal would synthesize the diamonds as long as you had the correct high pressure and temperature. And another thing that was amazing to me was that the amount of credit that the management and everybody wanted to give to Wentorf for the simple role he played in substituting these other metals for the things that I had substituted and the apparatus that I developed and whatnot. They really tended to play it up, and I began to wonder if I wasn't being discriminated against because I was a Mormon or something. Now, there's one other thing I need to get in here before I forget. About a week or so after I had made the diamonds a few times, I decided that it was time that I had someone else duplicate it. Well, I'd had a friend all these years, a Jewish friend by the name of Ed Brady, who worked in the same lab with me a good part of the time. I went into the lab with him when I first went to General Electric. So I asked Ed to come down one day and give him the directions and whatnot to make diamonds with the iron sulfide. Well, he made a run and didn't make him. As I remember it, on a second day I had him come down and try to duplicate it, and diamonds still were not made. Well, this is to be expected. I wasn't being 100% successful. I've already mentioned, I believe out of about 27 runs, of course I was fooling around with varying the ingredients, but out of 27 runs I had made diamonds 12 times. Well, a little later on, I believe, for a matter of fact, the last day of December of 1954, I had a friend of mine, T. Woodbury, come in to the lab and showed him how to do it and had him make a run, and he did make the diamonds. So to our knowledge then, this was the first time that a man had been able to duplicate the diamond synthesis claim of another. Well, now, the company management became concerned about duplication. They didn't want to put anything out in the way of publicity until they were sure that this thing could be duplicated. So they had Richard Oriani from the metallurgy department come and make three runs. And they also asked Hugh Woodbury to make three runs. And they didn't want me to supervise the runs. They didn't want to trust me. I might have been sneaking in diamonds from underneath my fingernail or something. But of course, I had taught Wentorf by this time how to make the diamonds. And they had Wentorf supervise these two guys watch and see that they did everything without any chicanery. And they made three runs apiece with the iron sulfide system and did duplicate the process for making diamonds. They were successful in all three runs that each of them made, a total of six runs. Well, I'd leave the sigh of relief after this. I couldn't be anywhere around. They didn't want me. This was kind of a legal test that the lawyers had dreamed up to prove that there were no shenanigans going on and that diamonds could be made. Later on in the company publicity, they made a great point of this, that many others had claimed to synthesize diamonds, but no one else had been able to duplicate it. And so you couldn't say that anyone had really synthesized diamonds unless someone had been able to duplicate it. Yet in the same publicity, they always named first Herb Strong's synthesis of diamonds. And yet here this one had never been duplicated. Well, this was always bothersome to me. I always just handed me a letter that I wrote to the director of the search laboratory, Chauncey Sweets, on January the 10th of 1955, that she thinks I ought to read onto this record. Dear Dr. Sweets, Herb Nichols' press release on diamond synthesis indicates that there is not a clear understanding of my contributions to the super pressure program. This disturbs me considerably, as I feel that my contributions should rank as the outstanding scientific achievements of recent years. My contributions are, 1. The design of equipment which delivers proven pressures to 100,000 atmospheres and extrapolated pressures to 130,000 atmospheres at temperatures in excess of 3,000 degrees C for hours on end. This apparatus, which I have called the belt, was designed over 2 years ago. No other person on this program has made any basic contribution to high-pressure, high-temperature work since the belt was designed. The belt stands as the only 100,000-atmosphere high-temperature apparatus in existence. The closest approach to it is an apparatus of Dr. Strong, which has a proven pressure to 53,000 atmospheres. I wish to point out, however, that this design achieves this pressure only because it uses the three basic principles of the belt design. It differs from the belt only in minor detail. I could have been stronger than that, and I'm not quoting my letter now. So I just seemed to follow along just as closely. He was slow at first. He was many months behind at first, but then as he saw I was having more and more success with my apparatus, he kept changing the design of his, which started out originally to be a piston and cylinder device, to copy the half belt and the belt. Now to return to the letter. The three basic principles of the belt are, one, the all-important sandwich gasket of pyrophilite and metal, two, conical pistons and chamber, three, double ending to increase symmetry and eliminate stress concentration points. Items 1 and 2 are clearly my inventions. Item 3 is an obvious extension of the principle used by Bridgman. Without the sandwich gasket, we would be limited to a top pressure near 40,000 atmospheres. And very small size reaction chambers. This gasket allows increased relative motion between piston and chamber, giving larger size reaction chambers and the attainment of higher pressures. The sandwich gasket also provides, particularly in combination with the conical piston and chamber, a multi-staging effect which more than doubles the load that can be placed on the carbaloid and also eliminates the necessity for a double-acting press. The conical piston with 60-degree angle and as used in the belt makes it possible to double the thickness of the pyrophilite gasket or that which can be used between flat-faced surfaces. I have given a detailed discussion of these principles in Research Laboratory Report number 1064. 2. The first synthesis of diamonds by a process that can be duplicated. It is obvious that the company is able to make a public announcement on diamond synthesis because of my reproducible work. Yet the publicity emphasis as presently planned is on Dr. Strong's as yet unduplicated work. In view of the many unduplicated claims that have been made in the last 100 years, this emphasis seems unwise.
Stupid.
3. Studies and measurements at pressures to 100,000 atmospheres at high temperatures. 5 papers have been prepared on this work. They are A. Ultra-high pressure, high temperature equipment, the belt. B. The melting point of germanium to 100,000 atmospheres. C. Studies on sodium oxide, silicon oxide, water system at pressures to 100,000 atmospheres and temperatures to 2300 degrees centigrade. D. Attempts to synthesize diamond by direct transformation of graphite at pressures to 100,000 atmospheres and temperatures ranging to over 3000 degrees centigrade. E. Some hysteresis properties of stone at pressures to 100,000 atmospheres. The first two have been submitted for General Electric approval. The last three will be submitted shortly. Much additional work has also been done that will form the basis for future papers. I request that these papers be released for publication in view of the pending announcement of diamond synthesis. Of such scope that they will give backbone to the diamond announcement, bring additional prestige to the laboratory, and bring delayed recognition to the author. Because my pioneering 100,000 atmosphere high temperature work had not received adequate recognition, I planned to leave the research laboratory last spring. However, a token recognition in the form of financial compensation persuaded me to stay on. If at the present time I am not to receive the recognition, financial and otherwise, that my work merits, I will feel no incentive for continuing at the laboratory. Very truly yours, H. Tracy Hall. With copies to A.L. Marshall and A.J. Neerath. Well, this letter brought immediate reaction from Suits and Marshall. They got me cornered and tried to smooth things over and tell me that I'd get due recognition in due time, and I was always skeptical of what they told me. Suit says, well, he says, we've got this publicity plan for February 15th. He says, you go along with it the way we have it planned, and you'll eventually get your recognition because we'll let you publish your work on the diamond and so on. Well, it turned out that this never did happen. The first diamond paper that was published was a release from the publicity department, really. A letter to Nature that was, in effect, excerpt taken from publicity written by Miles Martin, another science writer that he had. I wanted no part of it. I told him I wouldn't put my name on it. I put my name on it anyway. Show it off to science. Then future publicity in the way of papers written to science on diamonds, had other names added, and didn't tell very much anyway. It kind of burned me up that at the publicity release, I was given a what seemed to me to be a minor role in describing what had gone on. Of course, the difficulty with the publicity release that's held at the laboratory, this was the largest publicity affair that G had ever held up to that point. Nothing was given in detail. There were no descriptions of how it was done. No descriptions of apparatus. It was just a plain publicity release indicating to the world that she had made diamonds. I was pretty sure after this letter that GE people would do something to try and placate me, and certainly after having synthesized diamonds, the fellow would be entitled to it.